a shot in the dark. Where he sort of spark. I'm a light that's too bright for me to see.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, here we go. I'm not even going to guess what episode this is. I've lost track. I haven't talked to you guys in forever. I feel like I haven't done a show in a million years, but it was the day before Thanksgiving when we had a couple days off. And you know, we had to take a couple days off even if we didn't want to, because the lovely and talented Jennifer Longworth took a couple days and went out of town. And I mean, without Jennifer, this whole thing just comes to a screaming halt. So shout out to Jennifer Longworth. I think we collectively kind of took some time off for the Thanksgiving holiday to be with family and friends. And you know, I hope you guys ate a ton of turkey. I hope you just ate too much. And I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, what do you mean you hope I ate too much? You think that's gluttony. You know, there's a fine line between gluttony and feasting. You know, there are times in this world when it is appropriate to partake deeply of the good things that God has given us, to the point that it is maybe even a little exhausting, and it has to do with your attitude about it and who you're with and why you're doing it. It's like alcohol. You know, C.S. Lewis famously said that I'll call no man my friend that I can't get drunk with. And, you know, we give him the benefit of the doubt. We assume he means, you know, that hilarity and the distinction that St. Augustine makes and Aquinas picks up, that you don't drink to the point of drunkenness, you drink to the point of hilarity. But I'll say that there are times when I could drink less, I could drink a little less and probably need to go to confession because of how much, where it affected me and why I was drinking. And I was trying to numb down. I was trying to escape, or trying to use that as some kind of a crutch or something. And there's other times where I've had maybe slightly more than would be a good idea. I certainly wouldn't need to get behind the wheel, but it was in the context of like deep Christian community with my brothers, and there's conversation and wonder and argument and all that stuff. And I think that's what Lewis was talking about. You know, that good old fashioned pipes and pints Catholicism that was there. I think that Thanksgiving, if you're doing it right, is the food based equivalent of that. When you're around family and friends. And when I grew up, my goodness, if my Aunt Rabbit had cooked a big old meal and went to all that trouble and cooked all that food, and you didn't have to loosen your belt a little after the meal, I mean, that'd be an insult. she would worry about it for days. It's like, so there's a family and gratitude are a good combination to make eating a lot of food into a feast and not gluttony. That being said, if you neglected the poor, you don't care about the poor, you don't care about those that go without, and it's just you and yours, well then, oh, God help us all. Anyway, so hey, this show is going to take a weekend recap format, just because I did some interesting stuff this weekend, and or since we last spoke, and I want to talk about it a little bit, and there's some, and I want to riff on some things along the way. So here we go. All right, so the last time you heard from me was the day before Thanksgiving, and Thanksgiving rolled around. And I just want to just put out a big old fat shout out to Chris and Natalie Stefanik. Chris and Nat have been so good to me since I moved to Denver. They take care of me on holidays when I'm in town. I'm, you know, for holidays, I usually go to California and I'm with the Schneers, which is my custom for Thanksgiving. But I was going to, I'm going to California this week, so I didn't go. And so I was in town. So I dropped Chris a, a text and informed him I would be in town, just so he knew. And of course, he immediately invited me over for Thanksgiving. So he told me I have a standing invite. But anyway, so that's there's something to be said about that, of reaching out to the people around you. It's not that they're broke and they don't have nothing to eat, but it's they need some place to go, you know. I mean, I have family here in Denver. I have a ton of family actually in Denver, but we're just, for whatever reason, that side of the family, that's not where we're at in our relationship. They don't, you know, that's not where I go, and that's fine, you know. And Chris and Nat invited me over, and I had a beautiful time. And so a massive shit, man, I got to see Joe and Elizabeth Zelasco. My friend Joe, who is, the Catholic world is so incestuous. That's a horrible word. It's a small world. And we our families get connected. So Joe Zelasco's little brother, Peter Zelasco, is a friend of mine. You've probably heard him mentioned on the show before. And Elizabeth Zelasco is Chris Stefanik's little sister. So two Catholic families have merged the empires there. And then Ben and Candace, shout out to you guys, and just so many beautiful kids and stuff, just everybody running around having fun. Every time I see Chris's kids, it seems like they've grown like a foot and gotten 10 years older. It just cry. I mean, and I go down there every month or two. It's just, I don't know what it is. They're just at that age where they're just all just sprouting. So had a beautiful time, ate a bunch of food. I made really, really good food. They made everything. They made all kinds of amazing stuff. Chris smoked the turkey and the big green egg, and it came out amazing. Chris and I are on the same page that smoke makes everything taste better. And I made Brussels sprouts with big chunks of pork belly, roasted and white onion, roasted till it was all caramelized and a little charred. And then I tossed them in a bourbon maple sriracha glaze. And that thing that you're thinking right now, we're like, oh my gosh, that sounds, yeah, that's what they tasted like. It was delicious. So what was it Chris called those? My bang bang Brussels sprouts or something. He's like, can you bring your bang bang Brussels sprouts? I'm getting famous for the Brussels sprouts, the same way I got famous for the caramelized onion goat cheese thingies. In the curry pumpkin chicken soup. So, you know, that was one of the things that was bad this year. So we had a great time and just hung out, and we just ate a ton and drank wine and drank cider and drank bourbon and smoked pipes and sat in the hot tub and played music and talked and watched Twilight Zone. And just a big, crazy, good family Thanksgiving. It was a blast. But it was kind of bittersweet, though, because I have a fairly well-set tradition of going to California, staying with Hope and Justin Schneer, and then we make Black Friday soup, which is the leftovers from the Thanksgiving meal version of the curry pumpkin chicken soup. If you don't know what that is, you can go to the podcast and scroll back a few episodes, because I got all crazy and gave the recipe out. I can't believe I did that. I've thought about going back and deleting that episode to try to get the damage under control. I can't, what was I thinking? Giving out the curry pumpkin chicken soup recipe on the air. I can't believe I did that. So, but I didn't get to do that this year. So I'm going to be in town hanging out with at Casa Schneer this next week. So maybe we'll have to make up some curry pumpkin chicken soup, or maybe they've got some leftover turkey stock frozen or something. We'll have to make up some Black Friday soup, something along those lines. So that was a blast. I just love hanging out with these big Catholic families with all these kids, and they're all cousins and they all know each other, and they're running around doing all kinds of crazy stuff and having fun. And it's just, I'm an only child from a broken home. So from about 12 years old on, it was just me and mom, you know, and dad came around sometimes, and I had closer relationships at time, sometimes than others with him. But you know, that I had, I wasn't super close to my cousins growing up. And so I never had that. So when I see three families and each of them, you know, are like five plus or growing on it, and they're all just running around having fun, and there's this big, huge, happy, amazing family, and they all share the same faith, and they're all so particular, and they're all so different. It's just life-giving to me. It's really life-giving to me, and I'm about to dive into the crucible of that by staying with at Casa Schneer this next week from Wednesday on. And so Wednesday night, Feast of St. Andrew, my feast day. I celebrate it like it's my birthday and like New Year's Day, like 2/11. It's my big day of the year. It's a long story why that's the case, but it is. Just, it's always been spiritually significant, and I feel it coming on this year. I am going to go see Over the Rhine play an acoustic Christmas set at the Troubadour on Wednesday night. And I'm so excited. Been listening to those guys forever. And there's a Over the Rhine reference coming up in one of the things I want to talk about from this weekend. So let's go to the break. And when I get back, I just want to talk about, Thanksgiving and about what that's about a little bit, why it's important to us. And then I got all kinds of other stuff on my sleeve. All right, you're listening to The Counterposition. I am your host, Andrew Whaley. And we'll be right back.
Let my sacred word to mutter. Ran too fast and turned to butter. I'm a bit too much for me to chew.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counterposition, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
Let me skip across the pond. I'm an ocean on and on. I'm a fish with no bowl that I outgrew. Lift my blood. See only one on track.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Redbox Media. All right, so if I sound a little punchy tonight, a little punchy, like I'm a little more entertainer kind of thing, I'm holding the mic. I'm telling you, it puts me in that Dean Martin mode. I'm like, you know, boom. I'm holding the microphone, man. And it's like, because I left my arm at down in that bunker below a center of the new evangelization, nestled somewhere in the Rockies, not unlike NORAD. I left it there. I got to buy a second arm. I got to buy a second mic arm. And I'm just going to have, I got a Mac charger. I have a MacBook charger in both places, so that I don't have to carry them back and forth. I'm going to have to just drop the $25 and get a, get another mic arm. I'm just going to have to do it. I don't want to, but I'm gonna. All right. Thanksgiving. I want to talk about Thanksgiving. All right. So Thanksgiving is always about, you know, harvest and pilgrims and, you know, the left freaks out. And I saw people posting memes about the last time a bunch of illegal immigrants came and took everyone's wealth and jobs. You know, that's what we're celebrating this weekend. You know, so everyone gets on the, you know, and just for the record, I'm Cherokee on two sides. So I'm not super pro manifest destiny. Hey, let's come over here and kill all the savages. I'm from a city, or I've lived deeply in a city that's right next to Trail of Tears State Park. I used to sit in my van and play guitar and read books and stuff by myself, like feet from Princess Otaki's grave, because there was a big shade tree there out by the Mississippi River. So I mean, I'm not saying there's nothing to that. I am saying that everyone thinks it's about something that happened then. And then if they don't think about that, the thing is, it's about being grateful. And what are you grateful for? I'm glad you guys came over. Thank you for coming over. I'm glad you're all here. It's all this gratitude and thanks about these, you know, kind of that you got these things, or, I mean, there's some, it's not bad, it's not untrue, but I just want to talk about gratitude. And I'm tempted to throw out some kind of a preaching metaphor, you know, or some kind of a preaching rhyme where I say that, you know, that an attitude of gratitude gives you latitude or something. It's like, but I do want to talk about the attitude of gratitude. And I'm going to, this makes me, it sounds, doesn't that sound Zig Ziglar? It sounds kind of, you know, it sounds like sales, it's like sales training or something, you know, or like, you know, self-help or something. But seriously, and I want to talk about having an attitude of gratitude. So what is gratitude about? Gratitude is the acknowledgement that you are not the source of the things in your life that have value, including your own existence. That everything good in your life, including your own being, did not come from you. As St. Paul says, what do you have that you've not been given? And so gratitude, if you ever meet someone who's truly, truly happy, in someone who has an actual, real, deep spiritual life, even if they're kind of a curmudgeon or something, you got to be careful with personality types and stuff. I guarantee if you get to know that person, they are a person who walks in gratitude. Because gratitude will keep you, the opposite of gratitude is pride. So really, gratitude's the door, kind of the, maybe the key that unlocks the door to humility. You cannot think that you're the source of something and then be thankful for it. You can't be grateful for something that you have if you think you're the one who is the ultimate source of that thing. Now, you could be thankful that you may have some great talent or something, and you're thankful for that. You may be very beautiful, and you may, you know, be thankful for that. You may have been blessed and given a lot of money in this world, or a lot of privilege or something, and you're thankful for that. But that's fine. But you acknowledge that you didn't make that money you inherited. And if you did make that money, then you still don't, if you see yourself as the maker of things and not the receiver and the shaper and the crafter of things, then you're going to be in trouble, because you, I don't care how good you are at making, paintings. Even if you make your own ink, make your own paint, you can't make rocks that are blue that could be crushed up. And you didn't figure out how to crush rocks and turn them into paint. You didn't do that. You're on the receiving end of this giant, deep gift, this pure, unadulterated gift that is everything that is not God and God himself in giving himself. And on top of that, I drove a car home today. I don't know how an internal combustion engine works. I mean, I got a decent idea, but if there was an apocalypse and there was like six of us left, and I was the one that knew the most about that, and I had to put together an internal combustion engine to get us around, we'd be screwed, because I have no idea how to do that. I don't know how that works, but I drove me a car today. You know, I turned a key and a controlled fire moved pieces in an organized way that transferred their motion to wheels and moved me from the Augustine Institute to my home, or from one place to another, way faster than I could have walked it or ridden a bicycle. I didn't do that. I didn't get that. You know, so having, and ultimately dial back, even if you are this great source of everything, I remember seeing Fabrice Hajjad at, the New York encounter for, Communion Liberation. And he was talking, he did kind of a take the, on something that I've seen Chris West do with Theology of the Body, but he was doing kind of more of a Thomas teleological take on it. And he said, you look down and you see your belly button and you know that you are not from yourself. So if you ever want to be grateful, look at your belly button and think to yourself, oh, I didn't make me. I am from something else, you know? And I mean, you go deeper than that. You go deep into our personhood, into our ability to exist and to love and have intellect and will and all that, to embody, to you, you know, Jazani talks about this, about how I am my source. I am this little creek that comes from a spring, and that spring comes from this deep well, and I don't know what it is, and I've never been there, and I don't get to go there, and I just get to come from that, but I am that. It is my source, and I am this extension of it, and I have all of my being from that. I am that which I come from. You know, that is gratitude. Acknowledging that everything you have, you know, and it's funny, for a while there, I was trying to get up and, trying to make a morning offering, you know, where you would, you know, that traditional morning offering. For a while, I was trying to do that traditional morning offering where, you know, you unite any sufferings or things you know, goods you have that day with the, you know, the sacrifice of the mass on all the altars of the world, do the Sacred Heart and Immaculate Heart and all that. And then that is kind of rote. And so I started just kind of like making making up my own morning offering. Like, Lord, I offer myself to you this day. I offer my prayer. I offer any stumbles I have, any getting back up that I may, you know, and that was closer, but it was still like, it wouldn't stick. And then I just started I found something that when I wake up rough sometimes. I'm a night owl and I open a coffee house half the time. So, and I am in the wrong business. I am not a morning person. And so I wake up rough sometimes. It's like alarm clock. Oh gosh, really? Seriously? And I lay there and I'm kind of get out of bed and I'm like, before my feet can even hit the floor, I am just like, everything, I'm like trying to just like, I'm analyzing the information, trying to find an angle, trying to remember something that I forgot that would keep me from having to get up at this point, you know? And I stand up and then the pain hits because I have bad knees and bad ankles and I have like autoimmune arthritis and stuff. And I've kind of got an old injury in my knee and it gets really stiff overnight. I fell down some stairs where I missed some stairs and tumbled back in 2006. And in fact, this weekend, I've had some trouble with it. When the weather shifts deep like this, sometimes that scar tissue flares up. And so my feet hit the floor and the pain kind of like, oh man, it's like I start walking towards the bathroom and I'm going to be like 3/4 of the way through my shower before I'm awake and I'm not like in pain. And I started just walking towards the shower, half asleep, in pain, wanting to like quit. I did say to myself, I get to experience what it's like to wake up. I get to be a subject that can experience this pain. I get to be, there is something other than God. There are a bunch of things other than God, and that's pure gift. And I am one of them. I hit the existential lottery. I get to be. That's gratitude, I think. I'm not saying I'm good at it. I'm saying that's the only version of it that gets me. I'm the only person I know that can take solace in being that existential that early in the morning. All right, let's go to the break. When we get back, we're going to shift gears. You're listening to The Counterposition. I am your host, Andrew Whitney.
Then how we crave a hanging in his dark.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
People singing, please don't sting, but please don't go.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, so I knew I was going to be traveling a lot. I'm leaving Wednesday for California. I come back Sunday night. I got a bunch of work at the shop, and then we're closed for the feast day on the 8th. And so I am on a plane on the 8th back to Flint, Michigan, and there to through Monday. So I got a lot of travel. I'm going to be home. I'm going to be gone more than I'm home in the next couple of weeks. And I've got a new staff that I'm training, and it's a lot. So this weekend, though, you know, the shop was closed on Thanksgiving and the day after. So I tell you what, man, I was talking about before the break about how I wake up. I sleep a lot better when the business that I'm responsible for is closed. It's like when no one's going there to open it and find something that's blown up or isn't coming, the computer's not coming on, or the delivery didn't show up, or I don't know what it is. And that doesn't happen most of the time. But man, it just is, there's the ability of, for me to just shut off in a way that I can't, you know? And so I was able to like sleep solid and sleep in, you know, over the weekend. Cause you know, I went to bed at a decent hour for Thanksgiving night, and I slept in pretty good on Friday, and I woke up refreshed and I got some coffee. And this has been I'm in a season in my life when I'm kind of going full circle to starting to dream about and think about and really pulling the trigger on some stuff that I was working on in the 90s, in the early to mid 90s. And a good portion of my calling that I've kind of been in and out of, but not really pulling the trigger on. And God's really opened up my heart to return to that. Mostly through my interaction with this project up in Flint, Michigan. Some of the stuff they're wanting to do, that they're wanting help with, is the very thing that I was called to do. And so God got kind of obvious. So I just felt this need to go back. And, you know, in StrengthsFinder, one of my strengths, one of my top five is context. I love to go back and look at where the plans were laid, you know? So I dug out all these files and I dug out these journals, and I was looking for some of my writings on kind of the vision that I had for a community with a coffee house and a group of house churches and a bunch of stuff. A bunch of ministry stuff and evangelization stuff back in the 90s, things that we had kind of tried to pull the trigger on in Columbia, Missouri, and then had kind of had starts and stops on afterwards. And so I was just looking for some particular pages that were just conversations from like Denny's or something, you know, in a notebook, that I ended up with the drawings. I think Kevin Clay actually did the drawings. He was my partner in crime on this stuff. And I was just looking for some of these diagrams and notes and stuff that we'd made. And I bumped into some old journals. And so what I did is almost all day Friday, kind of off and on doing my stuff and everything, and then off and on most of Saturday, I read my journals from 95, 96, and 97. I went back and read, especially 96 was covered really deeply. And in 1996, I had just gotten over. So the very first week of 1996, I had, had a back surgery. I had spent the last 6 months. There are hardly any writings from that last 6 months of 95. Because I was laying on the floor and in mind-numbing pain, and could barely ride, and or there's a few, there's a few little ridings there. And 96, I moved into this little basement apartment. I ended up starting to study philosophy and religion at Southeast Missouri State University. And I just had a lot of, I didn't have a job that first semester. I was living off loans and, you know, recovering from this back injury. So I had a lot of time on my hands. I didn't have a car. That's a story for another time, because my van burned to the ground. It's one of these days I'm going to tell the story of the burning van. Still haven't decided what it means. I'm going to tell that story whenever. I'm going to do a podcast at some point about discuss seeing meaning that's there, or seeing making meaning that isn't there. And I'm going to tell the story of the burning van at that point. But I didn't have a car. My van had burned to the ground. And I didn't have a car, and I was going to school, and so I had a lot of time, and I was kind of going through it. I had lost my ministry. I had lost my health. I had lost my van, and I was living in a basement apartment, getting my head handed to me in a secular university, and basically losing my faith at the same time, just struggling, you know, and begging God, you know. And it was interesting. I was telling, one of my roommates, Joe Sweet, the other day about, he's a young man, he's early 20s. And I said, I tell you what, I went through this experience this weekend. Journal, pour your heart out in writing and save it. Because it's funny, I read 2.5 years of my most personal deep thoughts as a young man. And, I was both heartened and just shocked and dismayed, because there are things that I still desire and that haven't come around, that I still desire, that I desired even more then. And I think that when I look at that, I can trust that those are things I can trust, that it's like, okay, that's stood the test of time. That's still something that's on my heart that I can't shake. And there are things that I'm still dealing with, man. Sin, personality quirks, spiritual wounds, psychological and mental wounds, addictions and stuff, things that I'm still dealing with today, that I am talking about how sick of and tired of I am in these journals. And that made me just go, oh, Lord Jesus Christ, have mercy on me, a sinner. That's just absolutely mind-boggling that that's the case. But it was interesting. It was really interesting to just see who I was and where I was at and what was on my heart and what's changed. One thing I noticed is I was still, you know, within a few years of coming back to the Catholic Church, and I had been a Protestant for about 6 years and in a tradition that was very, 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 scripture centric. And man, my metaphors, my speaking, the way I talk, I'm speaking to myself. I mean, I'm writing in my own journal. There's peppered with scripture. And I looked at that and I just mourned that. I was like, God, I used to just have such a deep, deep connection and love for the word of God. You know, now in some ways, I've rightly put that in its place, because I now have sacraments and I have the broader tradition of the church. And I was making the Bible do more than it was supposed to do back then. But man, I threw some serious baby out with that bathwater, and that's something I'm going to have to make some adjustment on. But I went through and I just saw who I was and who I've been at. And I kind of filled in the blanks, and I'm like, it's interesting. So if you ever have a chance to do that, if you kept good, solid journals when you were younger, and let's say you're like in your 30s or 40s, and you can go back and look at those journals. That was a couple days well spent. I can really say that was a couple days well spent. I even went as far as to go and read in a couple of coffee houses that were not the kind of coffee houses I go to. They're kind of second wave, 90s style coffee houses. I went to coffee houses that I don't like, and because that environment, and I drank what I would have drank then, which was like a dark roast with no cream or anything in it. And just to kind of put myself back in that place, you know, and it was interesting. I put myself back in that place and I did some visualization just as I was reading. I could see the apartment around me. I could see these different places I was writing. And, it was really, really, really worth doing. So if you're a person that has some journals laying around and some old works, that some old time places of some way that you poured your heart out about who you are and where you were and what you were longing for, go back and read those. That was a really good exercise. I even watched Good Will Hunting. I was done with that and I was too tired to write on last night, and so I broke out Good Will Hunting and watched it because it was kind of from, it was later, it was like 98, but it was my journals went all the way into kind of my journals went all the way into that spring of 98. Yes, I tracked myself going off to college, driving across this country and everything for the first time. Just amazing. So yeah, that's what I did this weekend. It was worth doing. I'm encouraging you, if you have a chance to do such a thing, do that. All right, let's go to the break and we'll bring it home. When we get back, you're listening to The Counterposition. I am your host, Andrew Whaley, and we'll see you on the other side.
Then all the colored glass, that painter's palette smash. All the colors of my soul.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counterposition, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a hyena laughing fool. I'm a hero without anyone to save. Love decked myself in toys. I'm a poor and kingly boy. Oh, I'm lovely, and I'm dull.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley. And so the final lap. The we're coming around the bend here, the fourth segment. All right, so I got a lot to cover. So I had an interesting situation today. So I had, I went to church twice today. First, I went to, Divine Liturgy at Holy Protection and Mother of God. I want to talk about that a little bit. Oh, hey, speaking of, I want to send a fat shout out to, Father Thomas Loya. I guess, Father Thomas, had caught some snippet of my show on the live feed and liked something I had to say and asked about it and tried to figure out who I was or something. So as great, that was amazing to me because I love Father Thomas Loya. I've watched his videos, talking about theology body from the perspective of an artist and whatnot. And, I'm a fan. So, we're supposed to be getting connected and talking a little bit. So I have a funny feeling that, we're going to end up with an interview with Father Thomas Loya on the show. Cause I'm a fan and evidently he liked my show at least once. So I'm assuming he caught me at a moment of brilliance and he'll get disillusioned after he listens for a while, but I'm a fan. And so, he's a Byzantine priest from, the Chicago area and a speaker on theology of the body and a former art student that kind of takes that artist, stance on it. Which I find, as a former, art major and an art prodigy when I was a little kid, I've had some profound experiences around that realm of the topics around theology of the body in the realm of art. And, dying to talk to him about this. So anyway, big fat shout out to Father Thomas Loya. It's one of the coolest things that's happened to me when someone that I admire and who I'm a fan of pokes their head out and says that they kind of dug what I do. I'm like, man, that made my weekend. That was great. So I went to Divine Liturgy and, it was interesting. There were some faces missing And I didn't see Xena, the Disney warrior princess. I did not see Sarah the Quitter, Stacy. And I assumed that Sarah quit. And that's why she wasn't there, because that's what she does. She's a quitter. Such an inside joke. I'm glad when they move on and find something better to do with their life. Something more along the lines of their degree. But I lost Sarah as kind of my lead barista. And I'm feeling the pain of not having such a fresh staff that are all needing training. And I kind of liked having her around. Shh, don't tell her I said that. Anyway, so I went to Divine Liturgy, and it was cool. It was interesting because there was a few, I mean, there was people there that I recognized, but a lot of the people that I kind of have a touch, a connection with from outside of that church wasn't there. And I still kind of felt at home, and I still felt kind of like, in my space. I think this has kind of become my church, you know. I've been going the Byzantine route over at Hope Pro Mogo, for about, over a month now. And I'm kind of getting used to it. I still have to go to the website sometimes and listen to Father Brian Larkin's sermons. Not that Father Michael's sermons aren't good. They are. They're great. And Joel Barstad knocked it out of the park with a subdeacon. Joel Barstad knocked it out of the park with a great little reflection afterwards today. So that was good. That was just interesting to see, kind of to feel yourself kind of like caught off guard by the fact that you're at home. You know, and you feel like, oh, these are, yeah, I don't even know half their names. I'm like, oh, there's the one girl, and oh, she's helping with the babies with the one family, and oh, there's that one lady that always, yeah, okay, oh, and there's the old guy, yeah, there's the guy that, okay, yeah, and it's, and everybody says, hey, how you doing, you know, they're not surprised to see me anymore. I'm like, and it's such a small church, I'm like, yeah, I think I'm kind of at home here. So, yeah, I'm kind of digging it. So it was beautiful, as always, you know. The Divine Liturgy, if you haven't experienced it, is, it's kind of shocking coming from a Roman background if you're not used to it. And, I would tell you to go check it out and do what they told me to do. And I didn't do for like the first four or five times back in the day. And that is, don't even pick up a book. Don't try to follow along. Just let it wash over you. Because I tried to follow along and I got really pissed because I don't like not knowing what's going on and what's the significant. Because I know the Roman liturgy really well, and I know what we're doing, and I know why we're doing it, and I know why we're doing it then. So, but it was great. But I want to talk a little bit about a couple of thoughts. I'm not going to plagiarize Subdeacon Joel Barstad's sermon, but he brought up some. The gospel was about the woman who was all hunched over, and she had a spirit of weakness on her. And there's all kinds of stuff. We could talk about the demonic. We could talk about curing on the Sabbath and them getting mad about it. Joel made a great argument that there's kind of two traditions on how to treat the Sabbath, and just in Jesus by healing someone on the Sabbath, in the kind of the Deuteronomic tradition, was actually, well, he was basically asserting himself as a current strain of thought on that kind of world. He wasn't just like coming out of the blue with some way of approaching the Sabbath that no one ever heard about. And, you know, an interesting thing to think about would be what did they think he was doing? You see things like when he puts his fingers in his ear and he cries loud and yells, and when he makes paste and puts it in their eyes. These were kind of things that people who were the doctors of the day did. So there was it's funny. It's like, you know, you say a teacher of the law came, or a law, you know, it's like, so this, you know, someone who's a lawyer and he's a theologian, they're kind of mixed then. Someone who's kind of a healer, it's like, it's not like the, in this culture, the boundaries between a religious act and kind of a vocational act are a little interesting, but the main thing he talked about is that this vision of how we're made and how we're supposed to stand up and he raises her up and she stands up straight. And, you know, I couldn't help but thinking about C.S. Lewis talking about evolution and saying that it seems like that it took a very particular form of body to be fitting for the manner of our being. Because it seems like God took a long time to get it just right before he kind of breathed his image and likeness into one of these little animals walking around, you know. And he created it. It took a long, it took a while. But, you know, he was talking about something I'd never thought about. He brought out an insight where animals that have eyes on the front of their head are predators, and animals that have their eyes on the side of their head are the prey. Like, they're made to be able to see something coming and run. They're made to see forward to chase, right? And we're made to be able to stand up, to look. We have hands that have opposable thumbs, so we can set our hands to stuff and we can make things. We can make tools. We can make technology. We can make machines. We make art. We have a mouth that can speak in very detailed ways to communicate our interior life. We can write poetry. We can tell stories. It's like that our manner of being in that upright nature to be able to see like that is part of our human making. And so he's restoring her to be what she's called to be in a way. So I just thought that was interesting. And I could go on and on and on about that, but I got only a couple minutes left and I want to talk about something else. So I said I went to church twice today, and I did. I've been listening to the Bloom. There's a church, there's an emergent church, kind of a group of house churches. That's kind of an emergent church that's very liturgical here called Bloom. And the pastor is Andrew Arndt. And I've had kind of a preacher crush on Andrew Arndt for a while. The guy just can flat dab preach. I mean, he just loves God and it oozes out of him. It reminds me of Jeff Perry back in the day when I used to go visit St. Louis Family Church. It was way up in St. Louis and I live like an hour and a half south. It was out in Chesterfield. And I used to go up there and visit his church and listen to a sermon. And I would buy all the tapes from the time when I was there last, and I would drive around delivering pizza, listening to those sermons over and over again, memorizing some of them. And, he just oozes the fact that he's just hungry for God and loves God, but has deep humility and wonder and awe. And that's what Andrew's like that, man. It's just, I love listening to him preach. And so I've been meaning to go visit. And this project that I'm working on in Flint, Michigan, we were talking about a model of something we could do to kind of penetrate the city and incorporate the students with some of the poor people in the other neighborhoods and break down some of these barriers and create some nodes of real Christian community. And I saw what we were talking about because it's what I was working on in the 90s. It was a cell church, right? And so I had been meaning to go visit Bloom, and that was just kind of the straw that broke the camel's back. And so for the first time in a really, 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 really long time, without it being a wedding or something, I walked into a Protestant church and listened to a sermon and watched how they did things. And it was weird because they're very liturgical, but they're pulling a lot from the Book of Common Prayer. And so there was a lot of things that were really, really common, but not common. But anyway, long story short, I hit it off really well with some people there. I was really, really welcomed. I tell you what, we could learn so much from the Protestants on that. I have walked into a lot of Catholic churches and a lot of Catholic churches all over this country and barely been acknowledged that I'm not from there. And I got greeted like 16 times on the way in the door. So, oh goodness, we're out of time as always happens. So, well, I'm going to bite the bullet and, pull the plug and pop the cork on another episode of The Counter Position. Thanks for coming out.
I take your place, marble stone. I take your place, marble stone.